I'm Anne, co-host of Transparency in Teaching, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another great episode of My EdTech Live. Thank you so much for joining us on this wonderful Monday evening, or it may be well into Tuesday, depending on where you're joining us around the world. But thank you so much, as always, for all of your support. We appreciate all the likes, the shares, the follows. Thank you so much for also to all our new subscribers on YouTube. Thank you so much for all of your support. As you know, our mission for this year is to get to 1,000 subscribers. And I appreciate every single one of you that has hopped on to YouTube, given us a thumbs up and subscribed. We really appreciate that in sharing, you know, what we do with the world. So thank you as always. And again, I also want to give a big shout out to our sponsors that we have, Lucid for Education, Goose Chase. Thank you so much. Also, big shout out to Content Clips as well. Appreciate you, Dylan Schmidt. So thank you all for all of your support. So I am excited for today's conversation. And of course, as we know, this is a conversation that we've been going on and on for about a year, but we're just getting started. We're just scratching the surface because there's so much that is happening and then so many changes that occur from day to day and even week by week and so on. So I'm excited to bring on an amazing guest, which I will allow her to introduce herself shortly. So, but before we get started, as always, again, guys, we do what we do for you, and hopefully these conversations continue to bring forth some amazing fruit and hopefully some knowledge nuggets that you can sprinkle onto what you are already doing great. So let's go ahead and dive in, and I would love to welcome to the show Dr. Kip Glazier. How are you doing this evening?
I'm well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you here, and I must say that about 4 months ago, or maybe even a little bit longer, I met you for the very first time. I joined a Zoom session, and I can't remember exactly through what group, but I was like blown away with, you know, everything that you shared. And obviously, the people within the group too. And we were talking about AI, and I had brought up the idea of AI in higher ed and how at least my university has really embraced it. And even during the doctoral program, they've embraced it and are completely like, hey, we know it's here. Let's get your writing better and let's crank out that dissertation and do all of that with the tools that are available now. So it was a great conversation. And now I get to have you here on the show, and it's really exciting. So for all our audience members, Dr. Kip, that may not be familiar with your work yet or haven't connected with you yet, can you give us a little brief introduction and what your context is within the education space?
Thank you so much. You're very sweet. Hi, my name is Kip Glazier. I'm a proud principal of Mountain View High School in Mountain View, California, where we are in the heart of Silicon Valley and home of Google. And prior to that, I was in other districts, and I ended up here because we have family in the Oakland area. And I'm very excited to be here in this time where AI is booming here in Silicon Valley, and there's lots of research happening here through Stanford University, Berkeley, all the places that are the hub of innovation. So that's where I am. And prior to coming here, I share with my families as well as all my students that I moved from South Korea, another tech place, when I was 23 years old. And at the time, I didn't speak English. So it's been over 25 years. So now you can kind of guess how old I am. And I had gone through the Korean education system, and now I was starting up again as a community college students. So I went through that process of getting my doctorate from Pepperdine University. And I also experienced Korean American school system as a mother of two children. So I've been in sort of many different education spaces as a teacher, tech coach, and now school administrator. So that's a little bit about me.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And of course, you know, like you mentioned, where you're located, it's just like technology hub. Everything is going on over there and it's just so busy. And now talking about this as well, Dr. Kip, I want to ask you, we were kind of talking a little bit in the pre-chat and, you know, the importance of having these conversations. And so I want to start off by asking you, you know, as far as AI within the past year and now going over a little bit year now since ChatGPT has come out. And of course, we've seen so many apps that have shown up in the edtech space and so on. I want to ask you, being where you're located, how has that influenced or, you know, as far as your work as an administrator, what are the types of conversations that you're currently having within your district with your teachers? And what are the initiatives may be in hand for student use? I know it's a loaded question, but I mean, I know that it kind of blends in together very well.
Thank you. Great question. I think since the introduction of ChatGPT, also generative AI, people's interest in AI has blossomed, right? The thing that I've been trying to grapple with and manage is lots of emotions among my staff as well as people I interact with, ranging from abject fear all the way to like utopian ideal of what AI can do for us. But I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. And I find myself as a school administrator, student and staff safety has to come before anything else we do. So I engage in that conversation as to where is this fear coming from and how do I make sure that my people are taken care of while not sacrificing how much innovation and the benefit can be utilized for my student learning. So it is exciting time and I am happy to engage with any sort of conversation in any context because I think the more we learn from each other, the better off we will be in the long run.
Absolutely. So I want to ask you a little bit, like, welcome Dr. McGee, Neka McGee, who's joining us here on LinkedIn. Thank you so much. Safety first. Absolutely. Which is where I was going to go with this conversation. So I want to ask you, as far as safety first and safety concerns, what are some of the initiatives that you're taking either within the district as a whole or maybe just within your campus? What have you seen is working and maybe what are you seeing some things that can still be improved upon?
Yes, so I've been involved with different organizations that have been in the AI space. So I try to educate my staff to say that AI has been around. Generative AI is slightly new, but Siri is an AI. Google Maps and AI, because AI at its core is mathematical algorithms that we're using to generate data and information. So let's just calm down, right? It's not something new. It's not magic. It is math. It is computer science. Let's take a deep breath before we get worked up. And I've been trying to introduce this concept of play, not pay. It is okay to experiment a little bit in the confines of the ecosystem, and it's okay to go slow to go fast, right? And then when we explore it together, let's center pedagogy because good teaching. I went to this one tech conference where the presenter said, which resonated with me, if you have terrible pedagogy and terrible teaching, tech just makes it worse. Right? It doesn't help to fix terrible pedagogy. So I try to introduce the conversation with our staff and say, you are the teacher in the classroom. You know your students and you know what they need. And if AI happens to enhance your understanding or your support for learning, then let's try it out and see how we can enhance your capacity as a teacher. So that's what we've been doing as a district as well as a site.
You know, and that's great that you bring that up, because oftentimes I think the big fear is like, okay, first, yes, this is going to come for our jobs. It's going to take our jobs and so on. But now, you know, educators are seeing, and you said it so well. It's like they are the teachers. And I always tell my teachers when I work with them, I says, hey guys, you guys are the masters of your classroom. Like you're the captains of this ship, and you guys get to lead it. You guys are learning engineers. You're creating learning experiences. And this is a tool that, like you mentioned, can help enhance a learning experience. Now, is it something that you have to use all the time? No, not really, because like you mentioned, that pedagogy, those strategies that you use, the way that you are already engaging students, if that's working, keep doing that. But like you mentioned, I love that you said, slowly maybe use it and see maybe how it can enhance either that lesson, or maybe you go deeper into, you know, just into the curriculum and so on. And I love that you mentioned that. So as far as experimenting, I absolutely love that, but also having those conversations, because something that a guest mentioned recently about 2 weeks ago, it's like, hey, we're taking 20th century practices and wrapping them up in 21st century practices with AI in the name of tech, and saying like, hey, now we're making this better. When in reality, I've seen many times that it's really been used as just kind of substitution, or maybe sometimes even creating more work. I still haven't quite seen where it's modifying or redefining, I should say, and augmenting a lot of the learning. Now, don't get me wrong, there are some wonderful educators that are doing that, but I feel like maybe when we went from, you know, brick and mortar to Chromebooks and working digitally, now you had digital handouts, and then you were just using your Chromebooks to annotate. And now we have this amazing tool in our hands, and we haven't really quite scratched the surface yet, because obviously we're trying to figure it out and having those conversations. So I want to ask too, now, kind of going along with this, with those in your district, or maybe also within your circle of peers and professionals that are admin too as well, what have been some of the biggest fears that teachers have shared with you about possibly using AI in the classroom?
Yeah, the cheating is one of the topics that come up a lot. And I am trying to work with my staff and vendors, really. In my professional opinion, AI detectors really don't work. Because if you understand what AI really does in terms of generative AI, especially large language model, a couple of ways that you can see whether somebody had actually cheated. One is the click count, right? Like there is a pattern that you can kind of detect. And I've actually worked with a financial advisor that said that there are people who are listening for the click of the password input to try to like break the code in hacking. But that's similarly when students are writing, you can kind of see that there is words appearing, deleting, come back, like, and then you know that there is sort of like the typing or writing happening. That's one way. And then second way you can really think about how the large language model might detect something is if I put all my writing samples into the AI model and say, next piece of writing, is it comparable to what I've done, right? That would be really way to figure out whether all of a sudden you have a tone in the voice that is very distinct, and all of a sudden you have this piece of writing that's so different, then you might be able to kind of detect that, oh, something is missing here. Even then, maybe I went through some maturation period where I read something and I'm thinking like, I'm going to put that in here. So I just caution teachers wanting me to purchase this very expensive AI detection. So that's one issue. Also, I've seen AI detector being used incorrectly, where it breaks relationship between a teacher and a student, right? And I think if we're really trying to assess learning, we have to look at the students as people, right? Like we have to center our students as people. And if you're going to use technology to really accuse somebody of cheating, then it has to be 100% really correct. And I don't think that we can do that. Or even if we could, the tone and tenor of how we're engaging our students, because kids make mistakes. Sometimes they're quote unquote cheating because they're overwhelmed or they feel like, oh, what AI writes sounds better than what I wrote. I've seen that happen, right? So I think we have to really be very, very careful when we introduce a new tool into our system that is really, truly human-centered and respectful of one another so we don't fundamentally damage our relationship with our students. Does that answer your question?
Yes, absolutely. Very well said. And going back on the topic of writing too, I mean, yeah. I've had other guests here that are professors that are just, you know, wonderful educators that are out there sharing this. And when they mention writing, you know, for a lot of us, and even in my experience growing up, like writing was so punitive. So I can understand where even with a tool like this, trying to say like, oh my gosh, like this can help me fix my citations. This can help me make all that correct. Because I always tell the story that growing up and going into college my freshman year and doing the writing, it was, you can write, you know, your research, have a 25 page paper. And then I remember getting 20 points off, but it was because, and it wasn't even on the content, it was on the citation. Yeah. And I'm like, ouch, this really hurts. So kind of talking about that punitive aspect and understanding like now, are we writing in for stamina? Are we writing for actual content and the learning? So I can see how a lot of students and even, you know, students at the university level are now like, wow, like now there's a tool that can be used to kind of give me that comfort level. And so I want to ask you about that on that side and that aspect. As far as seeing student use, what are some of the things that you've seen or the reactions that you get from students as they're using the tool? Are they being very, you know, very thoughtful with it? Or do you think this is something that they're just using to just completely, you know, do their work for them? What is it that you've seen within your scope of work?
I think that our students are very thoughtful. And when we engage our kids, they know the difference, right? That, oh yeah, I use Grammarly, which is AI, to make sure that I'm speaking or writing in a way that is grammatically correct. Am I going to penalize them for that? I don't think so. I use Grammarly sometimes to make sure that I'm typing words correctly. So that, and students get it, that asking ChatGPT or other tools to write their entire essay is cheating. They know. And they have said when they don't understand the assignment or they need inspiration, they're going to engage AI tool to kind of get them unstuck. So I feel like when you do a good job of helping them understand the difference between original work and or relying on study aid and really talk about AI and digital literacy, our young people respond to that in a way that we'd like to see them respond. So maybe that's why I'm a high school principal. I love kids, especially this age group, the teenagers. Some people say I would never be able to work with that group, but they're so funny and they're so also very like righteous, right? Like they're like, that's not right that you just ask ChatGPT to write everything for you. That is cheating and we're not going to stand for it. I've heard students say that. So that's the way that I like us to be able to extend our cognition. And I think our kids, if you engage them in the right way and help them understand, they'll come through. And I believe in this so much.
Oh, no, I am with you 100%. And I love that you mentioned that. But the important thing, too, is just really having those conversations. And, you know, what I'm hearing from you is that what you are doing currently, not only within your school, but it seems like within your district was something that was very carefully thought of. So I want to ask you now we're going to talk a little bit more about now the administrator side of it, because like I mentioned to you, many times I feel that, you know, here, at least in our area, that we've kind of fallen behind. We haven't had those conversations, and especially here in Texas, from January all the way till late April, the focus is always state testing. So a lot of either new initiatives or even rolling out something or having these conversations about AI just kind of fall by the wayside. And I have a fear that it's just going to be another year without having those conversations. So I want to ask you, what was your experience like within your district? Who initiated those conversations, and who are the people that are involved in those conversations to be able to do what you're currently doing within your school?
I think every level of leadership, I think we're lucky. Let me just say that we're in the Silicon Valley, so our parent population is very well-versed in tech. So from superintendent on down, staff, students, we were having conversations almost immediately after when ChatGPT came out. Having said that, we were actually deliberate in our speed to adopt a tool for the district, and that I did engage my leadership in that. And I invited a researcher friend of mine from Digital Promise this January to have actually our professional learning day to be about some of those concerns as well as benefits around AI, so that we can slowly introduce these tools to the staff. And we officially adopted Canva as one of the tools for to wade into this area of how do we show our staff there is benefit in some sort of automation, right? And we're actually talking about adopting a second tool that is much more language-based. And I appreciate my leadership sort of indulging me, because I have some expertise in this area, as well as trying to be very deliberate. So these tools, we started with very small pilot group of teachers in different areas. So I asked my EL teachers to use it for our language learners to see if this will be helpful. And then we expanded out a little bit with the science and math teachers and say, what does it look like in your classroom? And then we try to expand it out with our tech director and see if the tool that we're going to adopt is COPPA compliant, FERPA, HIPAA, all the things before we go full on in wide scale adoption. So I think these sort of conversations, every time when you engage small stakeholder group, I think you're also doing education, right? Not only just you're soliciting feedback and saying, okay, tell me about how that helps you in your own context and your job, because I think there has to be some sort of practicality rules day attitude, right? Teachers, they appreciate you talking about this philosophical and theoretical things, but they also want to know, what can I do for my student tomorrow when I walk into the classroom? Can I use this? So we try to balance that. And I'm very proud to say that my district is doing a great job, maybe because I'm part of it, in trying to sort of balance those two competing interests while delivering information to our staff.
That is wonderful. And, you know, I love what you said and about keeping it simple too, you know, starting off slow. Many times I know that we can get very excited, and a lot of teachers get really excited. And I know we have a lot of early adopters. We have just people that take the initiative and they, you know, just use all the apps. And so one of the things that I've learned too, you know, when I first started this role, it was, I just want to give them all the apps, and it just found out that it was very overwhelming. But now, I have kind of adopted this philosophy, like really for all technology and even just AI. And I always say, like, kiss your technology or kiss your AI, which is keep it simple and streamlined. You know, it's like really find that one tool, two tools that really work for you, and really get to know them before you continue jumping onto anything else and see how you can really leverage that. So I love the fact that you started off simple and now you're building up, and having those conversations too is very important. Like you mentioned, it's don't just bring in somebody and give me, you know, the whole background and explain to me what it does, because a lot of teachers too, that they'll take that. But like you mentioned, one of the important things is, how can I use this tomorrow? Because I already want to use this with my kids, or already have these wonderful ideas, and I'm glad that your district is doing something wonderful and having these conversations. And I appreciate you sharing this because I know not only for myself, but for many other school districts out there to be able to listen to an example of what can be done and what has been done kind of gives us a little bit of, you know, an idea of how to get started, because there are so many people out there that are sharing, and to kind of sift through everything and see what's going to work. And then somebody else comes up with something else. And now you're like, well, wait a minute, like, do we stick with this or do we stick with this? And so that's also the difficult part. I find that for a lot of educators and people in your roles, like administrators and superintendents, you still have to sift through a lot. So that's very important things.
Yeah, I want to mention every tool you purchase or adopt, there has to be consideration for two things, in my opinion. One is I really like TPAC framework, where you're talking about content and technology competency, where everything has to, like, there is a sweet spot when you get the technology, content, pedagogy just right. So I think about how a tool will fit in that that circle of, you know, Venn diagram in the sweet spot. And also second thing is opportunity cost. Every tool you adopt, there has to be consideration for infrastructure and learning curve and maintenance costs. And oftentimes there is this understanding of what, okay, this tool will do X, but there is a whole another side of support that you have to consider. And sometimes just pencil and pen is the most effective way to get to the end result, because it is a piece of technology. So I try to help my staff as well as my colleagues understand, like, is there is place for everything, and it is the leader's job and then the teacher's job to really know the difference. And it is A-okay that if you feel like paper and pencil is the most effective tool to get the job done, then let's go for it, because those color pencils can do wonders for our students.
Absolutely. Like I said, I definitely agree with that, because oftentimes, like I said, we want to use the tech for the tech's sake many times. And, you know, and sometimes, like, you're absolutely right. You know, as much as I work as, you know, the district tech integrationist and working with teachers, sometimes, you know, when I do come and visit, I try and help teachers to take things off of their plate. And so I just want to make sure that we do make that what we're going to use is going to be something effective. And not only is the return on investment going to be great, but like you mentioned, the return on instruction has to be there too as well. Not just, hey, let's just use it because we need to get data and we need usage reports and we need to make sure that you use it. And oftentimes I feel that with as quickly as tech is growing, and as quickly as a lot of apps are putting in AI in this, in their particular platforms, many times I still find it that there isn't enough teacher or user feedback. And, you know, that the apps are rolling out and they're rolling out quick. They're providing solutions, but nobody's really looking for those solutions yet. So I don't know. Do you think that maybe the apps are getting ahead of themselves, or are they just trying to, like, hey, we're AI, we're hot now, and here's what we offer? What have you seen? You know, because I know that you have to be very considerate too, as far as what you allow your students or teachers to use also as well, because of the cost and obviously the return on instruction. How do you gauge what you recommend, you know, for any initiatives?
Yeah, that's why I'm saying that the framework as well as consideration for opportunity cost, super important. And I really try to hyper-focus on pedagogy, right? So if a tool says this is enhancing student learning, you have to be able to show that. Many of the tools that are out there are actually productivity tools. They're meant for enterprise solutions. They're not really meant for school environment. And schools have different flavor and different needs because of our compliance issues. And also we deal with children's data. So I get a little bit hesitant or skeptical in any time when a vendor or company says this is a panacea for all educational needs. And I'm like, yeah, no. So I think that's also important for certain sort of folks who are designing these tools to really think about whether you are grounding your product in sound pedagogy and learning science. Also, I think that we would love to have a silver bullet that's one thing that is going to fix all of it. The beautiful part about being in public school and also the humongous challenge is that K through 16, based on their student developmental stage, risk assessment, or the reliance on the staff competency and or comfortability, you really have to be very intentional in each stage, which means there's no one tool that is going to serve all K-16 system. And I think sometimes companies are building these tools like to say that they can. And I don't know that whether that is possible or we would want to. Like how would I feel if my kindergartner is being treated the same as my high school senior? Like nobody would even think that that's right. Yet in tech space, some tech people say that they can. And that's a little absurd. And I think educators need to stand up and push back a little bit because there is this interesting techno-chauvinism, I call it, where tech companies come in and say, we know how to do school better than you do. And I've seen my teacher sort of like, yeah, you're very smart with technology. Clearly, you know better. And I look at them like, but you know your students better. We can be both experts in our content area and domain area. And we need to work together to find the best solution for the age group that we're serving. And that is okay to say as a professional educator and professional administrator. So I would like to have that kind of conversation more often.
Oh, that is great. I love what you mentioned there. You know, it's just wonderful. But, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, many times we do see teachers that based on, you know, what they've gone through these past 4 years, you know, after COVID, you know, the burnout, the frustrations and things of that sort, that it almost seems like a lot of, you know, tech apps that are out there are, you know, using that as like, here, I'm offering you this solution. Or now it's almost like, oh, we can do this better and more efficiently and so on. But wait a minute, you know, the teachers, I absolutely agree with you, though, that the teachers know the students a lot better. And one of the things that I've learned too, and I learned this from a guest when they mentioned, and I don't know why it never dawned on me, but that's the beautiful part of continuing to learn, is that oftentimes is also allowing the students to lead the tech. You know, like what is it that is working for them? Like ask them, because many times, you know, we want to put what we think is going to work on them. But if we allow them time to, you know, play, and learn and see what works. I mean, their feedback is going to be so useful to us so we can adapt what we do and what we use. And now we're more intentional with something that is working for them. So that's the great part too that I've learned, you know, really allowing the students to give that feedback. And I think that that will also make the learning experience better. But us as teachers and educators and knowing our students definitely makes that a lot better and a better environment for learning. So that's huge for me too.
Yeah, and the possibility or promise of AI is that personalized learning, right? And the ability to differentiate within the classroom. And I think that is the kind of research that I'm very, very interested in learning about, so that the teachers who are with large group of students and they require individualized instruction. And we have every intention of wanting to give that, right? So in the past, I will walk into classroom and a teacher will say like, it is mild, medium, spicy. So there is a little bit of differentiation in terms of within the same instruction as to different difficulty level of questioning or different difficulty level of text. And automating some of that in support of individualized lesson. And if AI can do that, that is the place that I think we can really double down on how to help our students.
Absolutely. I love that. So I want to kind of just change it up a little bit too, because I want to also give you some time to share with us, you know, the amazing work that you're doing, not only as a principal, but I know that you are a very active speaker and presenter also as well. Like I mentioned, I met you through this group chat that it was Zoom, and I was just like, wow, I'm just very blown away. So I want to ask you, Dr. Kip, like, what outside of the scope of your work, how else are you out, you know, advocating, you know, about AI or the use of technology for education?
Thank you. I've been so lucky to be part of CSTA Equity Fellowship this year, and I've been part of a lot of different groups, but this by far has to be the most impactful and most wonderful experience of my professional life. So shout out to Live 5, my cohort out there, if you're listening. I absolutely adore them and their computer science teachers for the most part. And then there's another group that we support the computer science education. And also I'm part of Engage AI Institute, where we connect researchers with practitioners to ensure that whatever framework we develop for AI education through the National Science Foundation is impactful in the practitioner sphere. And whenever I get invited to speak at different conferences, I attended a couple that was hosted by Digital Promise. I try to bring my experience as a language learner, also high school principal, and classroom teacher for many years to make sure that we are grounding ourselves in that important work that we're doing day to day with our students. And I've been very lucky that so many people invite me to their space and actually think that what I have to say is important and they matter. So I want to thank you all for having me in this space.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, it's like your contributions are wonderful. And like I said, and that's because I just went into one Zoom meeting. And then after that, I was like, oh, I must follow on LinkedIn. And then, you know, seeing the work that you do, and then obviously the following that you have. And I'm not going to lie, you know, a lot of the people that follow you, I started following them too, because I myself find myself just really fascinated with anything that is dealing with education and education technology, but also just to also think about things differently too, learn from different perspectives, take the good, the bad, and kind of see, hey, where we're headed, and just to kind of stay, you know, in the know-how of everything, so that when I do have the opportunity to share here, or even, you know, within our district or even through the podcast and so on, we continue to bring that fruitful conversations with everybody to continue to grow. And because again, you know, we've seen so much happen over this year. And like you mentioned earlier, when we were just in the warm-up chat, it's like, hey, this is only the beginning. It's only going to get, you know, more extensive, and it's going to get, you know, bigger, faster, quicker. And, you know, we need to navigate that space, not only as an educator, but also as students and, you know, our students too. We need to make sure that they're prepared. So keep doing what you're doing, Dr. Kip. You're doing some amazing work, and thank you so much for being here this evening. I really appreciate just what you've shared, and really that administrator perspective will really go a long way for our audience members that are listening. I know we had Larissa Black here also, who mentioned that she says, love to hear about this from an administrator's perspective. So thank you so much for your shares. So Dr. Kip, before we wrap up, I always love to end the show with the following three questions, okay? So hopefully, I know I put them in the calendar. Hopefully, you had a little chance to glance at them, but if you didn't, it's okay. We'll make sure that, you know, we just get some great answers from you. So I want to start off with the first question. This one's a big favorite of a lot of the listeners here. So as we know, every superhero has a weakness or a pain point. And for Superman, kryptonite weakened him, and that was his biggest pain point. So I want to ask you, Dr. Kip, in the current state of education, what would you say is your current edu kryptonite or pain point?
I think the distance between knowing and doing, right? A lot of educators know, or at least they think they know what they need to do, and being able to do it, the distance is getting farther and farther apart, I feel like, and nationwide. Also, the demands of time and the knowledge that they have to get to be able to do their jobs. So I try to like shrink that whenever possible by way of either engaging them in a conversation or sometimes just giving my people a break, or I'll say, I'll get a sub, just go home and just relax, because what, even when they know something that they should be doing, they get so overwhelmed and they can't do it. So that's what I ask some leaders. Sometimes you just have to give people breathing room so they can get to the space of doing what they know to be true. Did that answer your question?
Yes, that is a great, great answer. Thank you so much. All right. Question number two. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be and why?
Education is a civil rights issue would be my billboard. I think that I came from a country where public education was not a thing, and free and universal public education. And I feel like the purpose of education really is to create educated populace for the protection of democracy. And our students' future depend on it. The fate of the republic depends on it. And I feel like being able to guarantee education in a way that every child has access really is a civil rights issue. So I'll be like, I don't mean to be political in any way, but I do think that education is a civil rights issue and everybody should know that.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Great answer. All right, Dr. Kip, the last question is there a hobby or activity that you love to do that you wish you can turn into a full-time profession?
Esports. I am a big game-based learning advocate. And I would love to see more female sports is a thing, right? And I would love to see more female gamers get paid. And I would be like, I don't know that I'd be a very good player because I'm not fast enough with those little controllers, but I would love to be like a coach or team owner of something. And I was an advisor for League of Legends Club, and we took the kids to Riot headquarters and we got to watch League of Legends gameplay live, and I was like, I would love to be part of that.
Yes, amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing. And Dr. Kip, like I said, it was an honor and a pleasure to have you here. It was great talking to you, and again, just your shares were wonderful, and I definitely have a lot to reflect on, a lot to chew on and just think about. And so thank you so much, because I know that our audience also, this is going to be a great benefit to them, and especially being able to learn a little bit more about those conversations from the top down and seeing how you're doing it is something that's great for many of us that are navigating this space and are still barely trying to get those conversations going. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for being so supportive and sweet. I really enjoyed our time together. Thank you.
Excellent. And for all our audience members, thank you so much for everybody who joined us on Instagram, on Twitter, on LinkedIn. Big shout out to Larissa Black. Thank you so much, Larissa. Big shout out to Dr. Neka McGee as well. Appreciate you. Appreciate all the love. And to all our audience members that are checking this out on the replay, Thank you, as always, for making my EdTech life what it is today. Please make sure that you check out this episode and the other 265 episodes that we have interviewing education practitioners, solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, founders. I promise you, you will find a little bit of something just for you, where you can take some knowledge nuggets and sprinkle them on to what you are already doing great. So thank you, as always, for all of your support. And if you're not following us on all socials, please make sure that you do. Follow us at My EdTech Life on all socials. And please, if you haven't done so yet, jump over to our YouTube channel. Give us a thumbs up, subscribe. We're trying to get to 1,000 subscribers. And we really appreciate all our new followers and subscribers. Big shout out to all of you for helping us get one step closer to our mission this year. So we appreciate all the love, the likes, the shares, and the follows. And my friends, don't forget, until next time, stay techie.